Good morning, church family. Thank you, worship team, for inspiring us to sing praise to God, and even the little children clapping their hands for joy and singing. I could even hear him. Wow, talk about being surrounded by fragrance. You know, the Bible speaks of God's presence as a fragrance, and that's a beautiful concept, because fragrance is something that people spend a lot of money to smell good, and companies spend a lot of money figuring out how to help people smell good. But it's beautiful. I just put a lay around my neck, and it's like there's this beautiful fragrance. So thank you, Marty, for the reminder of my days in Borneo and Hawaii. Actually, we had two of these trees right outside my window as a kid growing up in Borneo, and every night I went to bed smelling this. So it's a nice smell. We've been talking about our relationship with God, and how communing and dialoguing with God is vital and important to our everyday life, and it's also very important in the direction that we're going in our lives. I thought it'd be important at this point to bring in the Psalms. As you know, the book of Psalms is written by a man who is a master at communication. David has no problem saying what he thinks and how he feels. You notice that? If you read the Psalms, you will quickly come to the conclusion that David was a master at communication, not just in words, but in music. And I would like to believe he was also one of those people that was just absolutely pumped full of energy all the time. And it came across. He was probably someone who was very extravagant, and when he spoke, he probably used his hands and jumped around a little. So you've all met somebody like that in your life, and you know what that's about. But I believe that when David wrote the 23rd Psalm, he was an older man. And it's interesting, too, because if you look at the Psalms, you'll discover that some of the Psalms that David wrote go on and on and on and on. I mean, page after page. And they get rather lengthy in communicating his feelings, his emotions, his predicament, whatever, to God. But when it comes to the 23rd Psalm, it's very short, but very powerful and beautifully written. In fact, as a pastor, you know, I often find myself by the bedside of somebody who is in pain, somebody who is suffering. Quite often it's somebody who is at the end of their life. And I can tell you, without even stopping and for a moment and thinking about it, the one passage of Scripture in the entire Bible that people want to hear is the 23rd Psalm. It's amazing. It's almost without, you know, there are a couple other passages, but the 23rd Psalm, if I am standing by someone by their bed and I will ask them, would you like me to read a passage of Scripture? And they'll say, read me the 23rd Psalm. So I thought it would be good for us this morning to take a lesson in communication, in heavenly dialogue. By the way, we use the word dialogue because a dialogue indicates that what? Two people, right? A monologue is what? One person speaking to others. But a dialogue is when two people are communicating back and forth. And so if we are going to have this heavenly dialogue with God, if we're going to enter into this place of dialoguing, of communicating with God, perhaps it would be good for us to take a lesson from David. Because it seems to me that David never ever had a problem communicating with God, even when he was a young boy. Even when he was a young man, it must have started early in his life, because we know, according to the history, according to the Scriptures, that David was a shepherd boy. a shepherd boy. So it's no surprise that probably one of the most revered, one of the most favorite psalms, one of the most favorite writings of David is the 23rd Psalm. And it's not a surprise that it's written about shepherding. I was reminded again today on my way down as I drove there on Winchester, cutting through the mountainsides from Hemet over to Temecula. That same great big herd of sheep, they were there. Remember, I talked about them last week. I have no idea how many hundreds, but it's just like this whole field just full of sheep. What's interesting too is that when you first look out at the side of the road there, you don't really see the sheep because they're almost camouflaged because the grass is not green, it's brown. And they're eating, and then go, oh wow, look at all those sheep, you know. And it's almost startling because you don't expect to see that many sheep in one place. And so they were there again, and a different field. They had moved. The good shepherd had taken them from one field to another field. David, of course, in this psalm, is expressing not only his experience, as I said before, this was written when he was an older, experienced, wise man. And he uses, of course, something from his childhood, from his younger years, to express his relationship with God. So this relationship, this psalm, is expressing from not only David's experience, but it comes from deep within his soul. Okay? Turn, if you will, in your Bibles, or your iPads, or your phones, to Psalms 23. The fact is that we live in a world that is very, if you don't have to look very close to realize that we live in a pretty scary place. All right? And we're reminded daily that we live in a frightening world. A world there where even the media and they use fear and anxiety to achieve often what they want us to do or say or think. Even in advertising, you know, so often that is often what is used, fear and anxiety. It's something that we naturally go to as humans, unfortunately, because we live in at times a very scary world. But as Christians, I believe that we are given ample examples of ample men and women who, yes, they lived in a scary world too. In fact, many of them lived in a scarier world than we live in. We often think, well, things are really bad now. It's never been this bad. Oh, no. No. You need to study your history. If you think it's bad now, no. You need to go back. You don't have to go very far back. Things have always been pretty rough here in this world, sometimes rougher than others. And especially some countries are having a harder time than we are. So we need to rejoice and thank God for that we live in a country where there's freedom to worship, freedom to worship God in our church, freedom to express how we feel. And we have it good here, let's put it that way. But David gives us some wisdom and some advice on why, even though through his life there were difficulties and hardships, and he talks about those, that ultimately in the end of his life there is this feeling of confidence and assurance. Let's go to the text. Psalms 23. The Lord, and I'm going to read from the NIV, but here I believe we have the Message Bible on the bulletin. The Lord is my shepherd. Now, most of us, in fact, some of you have maybe gone through your whole life so far and never even seen a herd of sheep. You've seen pictures of them, maybe on TV or in a book, but maybe you've never actually witnessed or seen sheep and a shepherd and sheepdogs. in David's time, and for thousands of years, in many of the countries that the Bible describes, many of the nations and the countries, herding sheep, the entire economy revolved around shepherding, herding sheep and goats. I mean, think about it. The wool was used to make clothing, spun into thread, and clothing was woven. The skin of the sheep was used for many, many different things. It's a long list of what it was used for. Of course, the mutton, the meat, was food, sustained people, kept them alive, kept them healthy. And the list goes on and on and on. Shepherding was the center, in many ways, of the entire economy of villages, of cities, of maybe in some cases entire nations. Okay? So we need to understand that for the people of David's time, talking about sheep, talking about shepherding was a big thing. For us today, it would be like talking about the stock in the Apple company or Pepsi or something, you know. It's going up, it's coming down. It's, you know, that would be maybe an equivalent to it. When you talk about shepherding, when you talk about sheep, you're talking about a very important topic. So when David says to the people of his day, the Lord, Yahweh, is my shepherd. He is my shepherd. Listen to that. My shepherd. Didn't say our shepherd. My shepherd. He's a personal shepherd. All right? David sees the Lord as his personal shepherd. And that alone begins the entire psalm with a very personal note. And when the Lord Yahweh is my shepherd, I then shall not want. Now, their translations, they use different, they translate that differently. The Message says, I don't need a thing. I like that. I don't need a thing. When the Lord is my shepherd, I don't need a thing. Now, NIV says, I shall not want. Well, there's a lot of things I want. Okay? And I'm afraid that's the way it's going to be. There's a lot of things I want. So I kind of like the translation, the Message translation. There's nothing that I need. You see? There's a difference between what you want and what you need. Isn't that right? Have you ever discovered that? We want everything, but we only need what God believes that we need, and He will provide. So the idea here is that when I have God as my shepherd, I don't need anything, or I don't want, okay? And then he goes on to say, and he has bedded me, or I'm going to go to the NIV, he makes me to lie down in green pastures. Now, the idea of green pastures is more emphasized here because in the Middle East, you have green, and green pastures means there's water close by, because everything else is sand and rocks. Kind of like you go out to Palm Springs, and in the old days when there weren't a lot of buildings and houses out there, and there was only a few places where there was green, right? And where's that? Where there's water, okay? So you have the emphasis here on green. Now, the sheep that I've observed as I drove to work, to church this morning, everything they were eating there was no green. It's all brown. And, I'm amazed they found anything to eat, but obviously they are doing fine. They're pretty fat. And they had just been sheared, so they weren't just fluffy. They were fat. And so the idea here is that God provides the very best, okay? The green grass, the green pastures, and He leads me beside quiet waters. Now, some translations say still waters. Now, you say, well, okay, so what if the water is, you know, a big river flowing and whatever? Guess what? Sheep do not eat or will not drink from water that is flowing rapidly. Did you know that? They're afraid of it. They are afraid, and they will not drink. So the shepherd has to dam it up and make it still water. And then the sheep will drink. And it's interesting, too, because I've never owned a lamb or a sheep. One of my relatives did, and I was able to observe that sheep for a couple of days, actually a couple of weeks. And people say, well, sheep are really dumb. Well, actually, it's not dumbness. They are very meek and very mild-mannered. Unlike goats. I've had a goat as a pet. Goats are rascals. Goats, they will do anything and everything they can do to create turmoil. They do the oddest things. My son up in Walla Walla, they live on a small ranch, and they rent a space there. And they have a goat, a big billy goat. It's got big horns. And he's an interesting character. One day when I was there, this was like beginning of summer, a storm rolled in, and I thought, man, you know, I wonder if I should go out and open the barn door. So I asked my son, can I go out and open the barn door so the horse and the goat can go in the barn? He says, nah, they're fine. They'll find shelter. So all of a sudden it started to rain, and there was lightning flashing, and I thought, wow, look at that. And the horse actually found a big shady tree with branches, and he went underneath the branches. And I thought, well, what is the goat going to do, you know, because the horse kind of took up all the space. Guess what the goat did? He just went and stood underneath the horse. Horse didn't seem to care. And he was the driest. The goat was the driest. And he's just sitting there chewing his cud, you know, and the horse didn't seem to mind. So I pointed that out to my son, and he goes, oh yeah, they do that all the time. The goat always goes underneath the horse. So they have kind of a friendship there. It's also interesting to note that often they will put goats with sheep. That's because goats have a mind of their own. If you've ever owned one, you'll know they have a mind of their own. They can actually process information beyond that of what a sheep does. The sheep, hey, give me water, give me food, lead me to a nice pasture, and I'll be happy. The goat, no, the goat will actually go walk away from nice green grass to find some greener, better grass. And he'll do anything he can to get to that grass. He'll climb trees. My goat used to jump up and climb up on limbs to try to get, you know, the fruit off the tree or apples or whatever. They will do whatever they can to better their lives. A sheep is happy. As long as you give me green grass and water, I'm happy. All right? The goat says no. But they put goats with sheep because the goats will go to the front of the line and sort of lead the sheep. And the sheep will follow the goats. It's very interesting. Sheep will follow goats. Wherever the goat goes, the sheep follow. Kind of interesting concept, but the idea here is that David is pointing out that sheep need to have their food and their water sure. They need to know that they're going to have that, because they're not going to go out and look for it for themselves. They need it provided for them. So it's being provided here in this passage. It says, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. You see, God leads us to green pastures. He leads us to his word. He leads us to a place of peace, a place of rest. Why? To restore our souls. Now, you know, I'm always tempted when I'm speaking and I come to a place, a passage, where I think, wow, you know, we could really go somewhere with that. We could go off. Whole another sermon over here. Restores my soul. Does your soul need restoration this morning? Does it? Huh? Man, there are people who have jobs. I don't know how they recharge their batteries at the end of the week. Their jobs are so stressful and so absolutely insane. I mean, I think I'll use my son as an example. He's a fireman. And his specialty is in the paramedic department. That's what he does. That's all he does. And once in a while he gets into, you know, he wants to, you know, to use the hoses and all that other stuff, but he took special training just to deal with that aspect of it. And I said, you know, Ryan, don't you ever get tired of that? I mean, you pick people up off the freeway. He's described one to me, and I said, I don't need to hear any more. I just know that if I get in an accident, there's going to be somebody like you that's going to be there to help me when I'm all messed up. Thank God for our firemen and our paramedics and our doctors and our nurses. And I asked him, I said, Ryan, doesn't that like just sort of gross you out when you do that day after day after day, night after night, taking care of people that are all messed up and keeping them alive and some of them not alive, and you get there? What does that do to your mind? He says, Dad, if I wasn't a Christian, if I didn't have a faith in God, I wouldn't be able to do it. He says, the way I look at it is like this. He says, Dad, every time I go and respond to something tragic, something like this, I always see myself as the last person to minister to that individual. He says, if I didn't believe that, I couldn't do it. Restores my soul. The Lord Yahweh is my shepherd. He restores my soul. Think about that. I've never met a person yet that doesn't need to have their soul restored on a regular basis, or they call it battery, recharging your battery. Restores my soul. So, David, obviously, even in his old age, needed his shepherd to restore his soul. Verse 3. And he guides me in paths of righteousness for my name's sake. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Sheep, as I said before, need a leader. They need a shepherd. They need somebody to follow. And some of you are saying, well, I'd rather be the goat, because the goat pretty much knows what he wants to do, and he goes and does it. Well, David is not talking about goats here. He's obviously learned in his old age. He's become wise. And he knows that in following the shepherd, there's assurance, there's security, there's restoration, there's healing. And so he stays with that thought that the shepherd, that the sheep are led in the ways of righteousness. And then verse 4, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. By the way, did you notice he changed his tenses there? Or he changed the one minute he's saying the Lord is my shepherd, the next minute he's talking directly to God. Isn't that cool? He's talking directly, a dialogue with God. And what is it he's saying? Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. The valley of the shadow of death is anywhere where you have fear and anxiety, anywhere where there is stress, anywhere where there is insecurity and uncertainty, anywhere where there is pain and suffering and sorrow and sadness, anywhere where there is darkness, anywhere when you feel that you're being oppressed. Wow. I remember a flight that I was on coming down from Sacramento a number of years ago, probably 20-some years ago. And I've flown all over the world, but I was in for an experience that I will never forget. Coming down, flight was great. Coming in over from Sacramento, you cross over the Sierras. You can look down, you can see the lakes and, you know, the snow on the mountains, and it's beautiful looking down on the Sierras. coming then down over the desert, and then we begin to drop and descend down over Big Bear. Now, Big Bear's not, you know, I don't know how high. It's probably maybe at the highest, the 8,000. I don't know, maybe not even that. But anyways, it's not a big rugged mountain there. It's pretty small, insignificant. You don't have people walking around saying, "I climbed Big Bear Mountain." No, it's just not one of those things. I mean, it's nice, but it's not like Whitney or you know, some of the bigger mountains. And everything's going fine. Then all of a sudden, the whole plane just is jolted. I mean, just to the, like I had never felt before. I've been through some turbulent air, but it was like, did the wings fall off? I looked out. No, they're still there, but they're going like this. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. Birds flap their wings, but planes don't flap their wings to fly. Those wings were flapping, and it got worse and worse. And people are white-knuckling their chairs, and the captain comes on and says, "Please buckle up. We're experiencing some turbulence." And I'm going, "This is beyond turbulence, buddy. This is an e-ticket ride." So we're all white-knuckling it, and it gets worse. And we drop like this, and the things that the ladies had in the trays went flying all over the place, you know. And I'd seen that before, but I'd never felt a plane shudder and shake and make terrible sounds like that night. And it was night. And, of course, people were making, it got so bad that people were actually crying out. And, oh, like that kind of thing, you know, and that even makes your heart skip because, you know, you don't expect that. And all of a sudden, the lady across the aisle from me, she was just really white-knuckling it. Her face was a picture of utter terror. She began to cry out, I mean, praying, I guess, out loud, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." And she's quoting the entire 23rd Psalm. And it was interesting because when she started doing that, I thought, wow, this lady figures she's going down. I was feeling like we were going down, all right? I thought, man, this is it, you know. We're going to crash right there on that mountain, you know. And my family's going to see the plume of smoke, and they're going to say, you know. But as we descended even further down into the valley, making the descent going into Ontario Airport, it got worse. It shuddered and shook, and the plane was doing this kind of thing. And I'm going, okay, well, I know we have the Santa Anas and we have these winds that come through there, so this isn't so bad. This is normal. We get down to Ontario. We're getting lower and lower and lower, and the lady is still quoting the 23rd Psalm over and over. And while she was quoting, people were screaming. I thought, oh, that's interesting. "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want." And I started praying. Of course, I was praying all along the way too. But it was nice to hear somebody else was praying out loud. As we came in to land, we were still jumping up and down, and we came in and we got really low, and I thought, okay, now we're going to hit. And the pilot guns the engine and goes back up around, makes another pass. Now, that's never happened to me, even in Hong Kong, because the Hong Kong airport is the worst, coming over the ocean. And he guns and goes around. He says, don't worry, folks. We're just going to make another pass at this. We're experiencing some extreme turbulence, and I'm okay, so finally we landed, and there was a sigh of relief, and the lady kept praying. I thought that was wonderful, that she, even though she was safe now, she was still thanking the Lord, praising God. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." When you're in fear, in trepidation, pain, hardship, difficulty, call upon the Lord. He is your shepherd. He is your shepherd. And it's interesting here. He says, "I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." Of course, you probably already know why the shepherds carry a rod or a staff. And often they have a crook, a rounded crook or a V-shaped one. And those are used to retrieve the sheep that fall into a pit or over a cliff. They use that as an extension of their arms to retrieve those those animals that have fallen into the pit. You know, God also has assured us and promised us that when we're in the pit of despair, we're in the pit of suffering, we're in the pit of some catastrophe or hardship or difficulty of our uncertainty in our lives, He is there, and His rod and His staff will comfort us, will save us, will lift us up out of that experience. Sometimes it takes a couple tries because we don't always cooperate with the shepherd. But He is there. God is always there. And You prepare a table before Me in the presence of My enemies. You anoint My head with oil. My cup overflows. Beautiful symbolism here. Preparing a meal before the enemies. It has some symbolic symbolism. In the place in the Middle East and other places, when a person is shown respect and honor, there's a meal prepared for them to show respect for that person. Sometimes the enemies are there too, and you see, God says, "This is My child. This is My lamb. I am the shepherd. Here's what happens when I have My sheep. They hear My voice." And I will show them love and respect. And He prepares the table. He anoints His head, the oil of healing, anointing the head of the sheep whenever they have a bruise or they have something's happened, they're hurt. He anoints them with this oil that helps the wound to heal. His cup overflows. In other words, the idea of plenty, abundance. God doesn't just... He doesn't just pull us out of the pit, but He prepares a meal, and then He heals the pain and the suffering in our lives. But He goes even further than that. Isn't that beautiful? God doesn't just save. He lavishes His blessings on us. He lavishes us with love, with everything that we often don't, you know, we don't always... appreciate, but afterwards we look back and we say, that was God showing His love for me. Surely, goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You know that last phrase there, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I believe, is David answering the question. If you could ask God for something, David, what would you ask for? And I believe that's David's answer, to dwell in the house of the Lord forever. If you could ask God for something right now, what would it be? What would it be? But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. He will be our shepherd. And He will lavish us with so many blessings that we can't even number them. We can't even count them. Because He loves us. And we shall live in the house of the Lord forever.